You're listening to Asheville Free Media, ashevillefm.org, and this is The Final Straw. I'm your host, Bursa Goodness, and The Final Straw can also be heard on KXCF 91.5 FM in Marshall, California, and KWTF in Sonoma County, California. This show is brought to you with support from the worker owners at Firestorm Books and Cafe at 48 Commerce Street here in Asheville, North Carolina. Firestorm features organic coffee and milks, house-made baked goods, vegan sandwiches, radical literature, and a community calendar that can be found at www.firestormcafe.com. I'm just going to make a couple of quick announcements before we start up the show. Tonight at 6 p.m. until 1 a.m. at Rosetta's Kitchen downtown, it's 111 Broadway Street in Asheville, there is the Indonesian punk benefit show called Operation Mixtape Bigger Than Borders. Got Sunshine SS, Crucial Fiction, The Budget, Scat Attack, and more performing to raise awareness around and to create care packages to send to anarcho-punks in the Aceh region of Indonesia. We've also, in the Bay Area, there's a call out by the anti-repression crew for people to show up 9 a.m. until noon to support those arrested during move-in day. And this will be happening at the Wiley Manuel Alameda County Courthouse in Oakland. And the last thing I'd like to announce is that the group formerly known as the Asheville Solidarity Network, now known as Asheville Mutual Aid, is going to be putting on a waffle brunch at Firestorm Books and Cafe, 48 Commerce Street, at going from 11 a.m. until 1 p.m., $6 a plate, and this will be happening Sunday, March 11th, to benefit the mutual aid group. There will be vegan kale, grits, fruit, and waffles. This week we're speaking with Daryl Lamont Jenkins of One People's Project, based out of Philadelphia, PA. Daryl, can you tell the listeners what the One People's Project is?
Well, One People's Project is an organization that started in 2000 in response to a white supremacist organization called the Nationalist Movement that was holding a rally in Morristown, New Jersey. And we wanted a way to coordinate the counter demo. And as a result, we devised this website and kind of like a coalition that will provide information about what we were doing and what the other side was doing. And as and after the rally, we decided to basically just keep the coalition going and become some sort of an info shop for people that are more or less fighting fascism, right-wing groups and such. So we're more like a go-to source for any information about right-wing groups and individuals. We research, report on them, and we pretty much try to encourage people to get involved and do something about them, particularly the more, I would say, lunatic fringe side of right-wing politics, because as we've seen in CPAC earlier this month, they're inching their way into the mainstream, and that's pretty much what we're trying to prevent happening.
What can you say about CPAC?
I can tell you this about CPAC. I've been going to CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference, for about 10 years on and off. And I will tell you that in the recent years, I have never seen it this bad. I mean, it's one thing when you have a bunch of guys, a bunch of stuffed shirts, sitting there trying to tell us how they're going to run our lives. It's another thing when you have a bunch of yahoos that are more or less trying to get into the limelight by egging on or trying to ruin the lives of people they have nothing to do with. And that's what we saw with CPAC this year and in the past couple of years. Oh, and one of the most important things about this year is the fact that in its 39-year history, it's never seen a demo. No one has ever protested outside CPAC, at least not in the numbers that came out this year. This is the first time there was an organized protest against that conference. And I think it was basically people saying, you know what, enough is enough. I mean, you had Ann Coulter, every time Ann Coulter comes in, she tells something off color, says something off color that people get upset about for a couple of weeks after. Rush Limbaugh's going to the same talking trash. Glenn Beck is there. Andrew Breitbart's there. And now we have the John Birch Society as a sponsor last year. And now we have white supremacist groups holding conferences, holding workshops at the event. So add that on to the fact that it's an election year and people are really feeling empowered with the Occupy movement. Folks came out to make their presence known and said that this goes no further. At least that's what I was there for.
So, among other things, CPAC spawned the Youth for Western Civilization group, or movement, I guess, right? Can you talk about that group?
Well, in many respects, Youth for Western Civilization, the organization, had been around for a while. It would not be CPAC per se, even though they launched their inaugural event there in 2009. But the Youth for Western Civilization, YWC, they had been around since at least 2006, 2007. They really just started being a little bit more active over the past couple of years. The organization that's really responsible for a lot of the momentum that YWC gets is the Leadership Institute, which is the group that basically goes to colleges and looks for right-wing students to more or less cultivate into activists. That's where we get our car rolls from, so you can get an idea of just how bad they are. Well, a lot of the people, matter of fact, most of the people in Youth for Western Civilization, the founders in particular, are Leadership Institute. They were either interns or they are direct employees. And they had other organizations in the past. There was something called the Robert A. Taft Club, which they were bringing speakers, right-wing and paleoconservative speakers, to come and talk to their audiences in the D.C. area. And the founders of the Robert A. Taft Club went on to found Youth for Western Civilization. And that's what we've seen try to be active a little bit more. We saw what they did in the University of North Carolina when they invited their honorary chairman, Tom Pancrado, to speak, and everybody raised hell. And we see what's going on in Tulsa, Maryland, Tulsa University in Maryland, where one of their members is an out-and-out white supremacist. I mean, Youth for Western Civilization is a white supremacist organization, but they try to pretend they're not. Matthew Heimbach is not. He's a member of the League of the South, and he's Youth for Western Civilization, and he's promoting that in on campus there. So it is a concern. People are going to have to start focusing on YWC, particularly concerning their connections. Their founder, their head, main founder, Kevin Deanna, has since left the group. He left the group last week. He retired, basically. He's moving on to other things. So someone else is going to be taking the helm. But I don't know how strong the group is going to be, because there's a lot of people who are getting wise to them now. And they're pretty much tired of them. And whenever they come around, they're more or less being ostracized. So,
do you think that Marcus Epstein is going to be taking the helm of that organization, or you think it's, like you said, basically going out and it's not so much going to be of interest anymore? It's too in people's faces.
It's going to take some time for it to fizzle out. I will tell you flat out that the people who are putting groups like Youth for Western Civilization together, they're not going away just yet. It's going to take a little bit more prodding. But when you see Youth for Western Civilization go, and eventually they will, I would also submit that there is going to be a form of rebranding. What is called Youth for Western Civilization today may be something else tomorrow. And that's because they know what kind of a stigma the group is, a group such as Youth for Western Civilization will have. And white supremacists, this cluster of white supremacists that we deal with in the D.C., Virginia, Maryland area, that is really tied into the right-wing Washington, D.C. crowd, they live off plausible deniability. If their people can basically say basically deny and find ways to suggest that they are not racist, that they're not a hate group or whatever, they're going to use it, and that keeps them from getting in trouble. Once that is taken from them, they'll just simply rebrand. They will just simply rebrand. As for Marcus Epstein, it'll be interesting to see where he goes. We do know that he's at George Mason University now, the George Mason University Law School, after being rejected from rejected by University of Virginia Law School after attacking a black woman in 2007. And it's interesting to see if he thinks he's going to be a lawyer even after he gets his sheepskin over at George Mason, because there's a lot of people who are going to recognize him for what he is, and they're going to say, no, we can't do this. So Marcus Epstein is going to be someone that has a little bit of a bullseye on him. So it might be someone else that comes into play. It could be Matthew Heinbach. It could be I guess Deanna has said Taylor Rose may take the helm for right now. But, you know, we will see. We will see. But the one thing that we are going to we're going to have to just start recognizing these folks for who they are, even if the conservatives in this country and the Republicans don't, because right now the conservatives are pretty much flying by the seat of their pants, and it's going to get us all hurt if we don't start paying attention to that.
How does YWC brand itself? What's its messaging? How is it able to actually, if it is a white supremacist organization, how is it able to insert itself into educational institutions and get faculty sponsors? And
well, the thing is, like I said, it doesn't take much along the ways of plausible deniability for conservatives to use that to the hilt, so to speak. It only takes just a little bit. But in the case of Youth for Western Civilization, it's really, really thinly veiled. And it's almost insulting that they even use the plausible deniability routine. But it works for them. And right now, so what Kevin Deanna has said in the past, and we had actually quoted him in his Rogues Gallery entry on our website, he basically said that Western civilization, is a cultural compound of Christian, classical, and then the folk traditions of Europe. And it's kind of like being sly about the fact that he means white, but that's good enough. So Youth for Western Civilization members are able to more or less go under the auspices of the College Republicans, as they do in a number of universities, such as Providence College up in Rhode Island. They're able to rub elbows with, the Republican and conservative elite that you would normally find at CPAC and other areas of D.C. And I even had an argument with some folks out there who said that he was talking with some of the folks from Youth for Western Civilization at CPAC, and he didn't see them as a hate group. He didn't see them as racist. Now, granted, he was an attendee, and that's the point. If they're able to use any kind of way to weasel out of the racism charge, they will use it. And that's how they get over. And that's how they will continue to get over.
And how widespread is that organization around universities in the U.S.?
According to Deanna, and bear in mind, this is it's the kind of claim that I would generally hear from the Klan to begin with. There are a number of, I think there's like a dozen or so recognized chapters in a few universities here and there. Deanna will say, however, that there's more than that across the country. They're just not as recognized. Now, to that point, there are indeed people that we don't know that are involved with the organization, sure. But by the same token, the group is poison. And when the group does, like I said before, if the group does make itself known, people do repel and basically try to keep it at a distance because they know how damaging it is. So I'm not too certain just how strong the I guess, the membership base is. Although it has had a bit of money gone through it, thanks to the paleo conservative crowd out there, and I think that's one of the reasons why it has, if you want to call it such, a prominence within the political scene. But UFO Western Civilization doesn't have the strength to maintain all that long. Eventually, people are going to be afraid of being associated with this group, and they're going to go away.
So you've thrown out the term paleoconservatism a couple of times. Can you define that?
Paleoconservatives are basically, everybody likes to say far, 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 ultra-right. No, they are your suit and tie Nazis, period. They are the people who have decided that they needed to calm it down, take it down a notch. No Sieg Heiling and all this. They try to get away from the trappings of other white supremacists. They even try to concede and reach out to people that white supremacists will normally not reach out to. Case in point, when you're dealing with the Council of Conservative Citizens, when you're dealing with American Renaissance, they hate black people to the hilt. They hate Hispanics to the hilt. They will not attack the Jews. They think that's their way of getting over. In fact, some Jews have even spoken at the conferences of the American Renaissance, the publication that's put out by Jared Taylor. They have those that are kind of anti-Semitic still trying to get themselves involved, but they get themselves more so involved in academia. Kevin McDonald comes to mind. His Rogues Gallery was just put up last week, and he is the director of an organization called American Third Position. And they are very, very pro-Nazi, but they more or less hide it under the auspices of academia and just basically look as though they're putting forth an argument that needs to be studied. And in all actuality, it's nothing more than propaganda. So this is one of the reasons why you don't see a lot of people either noticing or I guess being active, because they don't think there's anything to be active towards, and that's dangerous. But that's how the paleoconservative gets over, and it's something that we're going to have to be mindful of.
So the American Third Position, your website shows, was hacked this month by members of Anonymous.
Right.
And I guess some of the leaked personal information on the site, and also some of the behind-the-scenes chatting that was going on through the site, somewhat linked the American Third Position with, well, outright Nazism, but also somewhat with Ron Paul. Trying to infiltrate leftist websites, it was saying, and getting them to support Ron Paul, but having this underlying understanding that Paul is at least friendlier to white supremacists. Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, and I think I'd better tie this all up in a little bow here, because we're basically all talking, more or less, when I'm talking about the paleoconservatives, I'm basically talking about the same people. UFO Western Civilization comes from that crowd. American Third Position comes from that crowd. Council of Conservative Citizens and the New Century Foundation, which is headed up by Jared Taylor and publishes the newsletter American Renaissance. There's more out there, National Policy Institute, which is headed up by Richard Spencer and so on and so forth. But to sum it up, there is a cluster of white supremacists that are focused or either based in the Washington, D.C. area that have this kind of political strength. And to that, basically, when you say, third positionism is kind of like a way to say, to bring forth right-wing politics with more or less, with more liberal mindsets, so to speak. They also call that libertarianism, unfortunately. And that's where Ron Paul comes in. These people are all about Ron Paul. And some of them have campaigned for him. Some of them have written for Ron Paul. And on the other end of that, Ron Paul has have spoken before You for Western Civilization, spoken before the Robert, I'm sorry, not You for Western Civilization, but Robert Taft Club. He's spoken before Robert Taft Club, and you can see that on YouTube. Ron Paul has taken money from these individuals. Ron Paul has hired some of these folks as either writers or organizers. And it's pretty much obvious as people look into this more and more and more that not only folks are using Ron Paul to cultivate some sort of base, so is Ron Paul. And when you say that, you basically start seeing a lot of your Ron Paul supporters trying to more or less fight you for even bringing it up. Unfortunately, facts are facts, and it comes across less of a case of denial and more of a case of them lying after a while. It goes back to what I was saying before about plausible deniability. Ron Paul has been playing that to the hilt, but more and more stuff just keeps coming out. In regards to American Third Position, I'm not too sure how much Ron Paul has reached out to them, but they just hired as their, their executive director or one of their board members is a woman named Virginia Abernathy. Virginia Abernathy is a member of the Council of Conservative Citizens, a longtime member. And she has given over the course of the past year $2,000 to Ron Paul's campaign. A couple of years ago, she gave $500 to Rand Paul. Ron Paul knows Virginia Abernathy very well, if you can, is what you can surmise from this from these donations. It has been brought up before. So if there's whatever Anonymous put out there, I would take it to heart. There was something that we should take a look at. And I know Ron Paul's people have said they had nothing to do with American Third Position, but I think that there's a little bit more that we need to look into because this keeps coming up a lot. And you're talking about a guy who wants to be president. And not only be president, but you're talking about a guy who's associated with white supremacists, who wants to defeat the first black president in America. And the last time he was trying to run against who would eventually be the first black president of America. No, I don't think this gentleman is somebody that we should be dealing with at all. And the American Third Position links just basically spell that out even more. And there's going to be more. I mean, it just never stops with this guy. It's worse than what Pat Buchanan was doing. Matter of fact, the same people who were supporting Pat Buchanan are now supporting Ron Paul. So it's basically we just see the same people doing the same things over and over again, and we act like it's something different. It's not. So we need to start paying closer attention to what Ron Paul was trying to do to the society and what Ron Paul was trying to do to the political process and deal with it.
I came across your website because it had a reference to an upcoming protest in Nashville, Tennessee, concerning deaths of Afrikaans or Boer people, I guess, in South Africa. So I guess there's a call out for protest. I'm kind of changing course right now, but a call out for protests against the South African government by white supremacists for Monday, the 27th of February. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's basically for years they've been the white supremacists have been trying to paint whites being more or less. They considered that. They say that in South Africa, since the apartheid system has been lifted, whites have been more or less disenfranchised. And also, since the crime rate has gone up in South Africa, they say whites are also the victims of genocide. And basically, whatever I would say straight up in regards to that, if that is the case, it will have to be dealt with, but it's not going to be dealt with working with white supremacists who want to bring the old system back. I'm sorry. That's one of the things to also bear in mind when it comes to white supremacist groups and other right-wing groups. They deal with legitimate issues, sure, but we can deal with legitimate issues with more with with legitimate people. We don't have to deal with them because they're the ones that are out there on the stump. I mean, we're dealing with the same thing with an immigration issue. Does the immigration issue need to be dealt with? Of course. But we don't have to deal with them with folks who want to basically make that into their little race war. And that's the same thing when it comes to the so-called South Africa project. So we've been sounding the alarm against who's been putting it together. We have basically old folks from the National Alliance, a white supremacist group that was headed up by William Pierce back in the day, about 10 years ago, it more or less lost power, so they're not really all that relevant anymore. Then you have Aryan Nations. Some of their old members or some of their current members are putting rallies together in other parts of the country. And on the other end of that, we have people that are going to be responding to it. I mean, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, there's going to be a rally. And there is also going to be a rally for universal equality. And that's put together by folks that are associated with Occupy Harrisburg. So, and you can find them on Facebook. Just look for, just go to Facebook and look for Rally for Universal Equality. Or better yet, if you want to find the link to that page, you can go to our sidebar. We have a mention of Harrisburg PA's rally. And I think it's going to be, and I think in regards to Pennsylvania, it's not going to be that well received. I always get these silly emails from white supremacists that are putting together events. They send me press releases about them. And usually when I get them, that basically means that they're not getting the, I guess, the attention that they want, and they know we will give it to them just on general principle. So I just basically was picking on the guy that was sending it to me because I know who the guy is. And if they have some sort of a rally, if they have significant numbers in PA, hey, whatever. But there's going to be a counter there. There's going to be people there. In regards to the rest of the country, I am not too sure what is going on. There was a small rally, I would say, also in Philadelphia that was put together by members of the Keystone State Skinheads. It was held on the sly. No one knew it. They borrowed us, four or five of them, just stood on the corner. A guy named Anthony James Olson, another Ron Paul supporter, who stood on the corner with a couple of his friends and passed out flyers to people who did not know who they were or what they were talking about. And then they left. And then they put the pictures up on Facebook and on YouTube and various other areas. But that's pretty much where it is when it comes to the event. I would just say, whatever the issue is that white supremacists try to address it with someone else. Do not address it with them. They are irrelevant. They want to use that to get at you, and you shouldn't help them. Just deal with it the right way, not their way.
We'll continue our conversation with Daryl Lamont Jenkins of One People's Project after this break.
We're talking after the war, the Nazis vanished without a trace, but battalions of fascists stood with a master race. The history books, they tell of their defeat in 45, but they all came out of the woodwork on the day the Nazi died. They say the prisoner of Spandau was a symbol of defeat. Was has remained in prison and the fascists they were beat. So the promise of an Aryan world would never materialize. So why did they all come out of the woodwork on the day the Nazi died? The world is riddled with maggots, the maggots are getting fat. They're making a tasty meal of all the bosses and bureaucrats. They're taking over the boardrooms and they're fat and full of pride. And they all came out of the woodwork on the day the Nazi died. So if you meet with these historians, I'll tell you what to say. Tell them that the Nazis never really went away. They're out there burning houses down and peddling racist lies. And we'll never rest again until
Nazi dies. We're back to our conversation with Daryl Lamont Jenkins of One People's Project out of Philadelphia, PA. An upcoming event that's going to be happening after that rally is the American Renaissance having a conference in the Nashville, Tennessee area. Can you talk a bit more about that organization and maybe their scheduling of it?
Well, American Renaissance is not an organization. The organization that the American Renaissance is published by is the New Century Foundation. But it's headed up by Jared Taylor. They've been publishing this newsletter for about 21 years actually. They actually just stopped publishing the printed version of that of the newsletter. Now you can only get it on the web. But basically, every 2 years they hold conferences of these paleoconservative type, and the neo Nazis that you will find. The Stormfront really loves to flock to these things, and they just basically promote the notion that there should be a separation of the races. Black people are genetically inferior, and all the talking points that white supremacists like to use, more or less. Except for they do not play the anti-Semitic routine that usually causes some issues among other white supremacists, but that's what they do. And they were on C-SPAN for years. Their conferences will be broadcast on C-SPAN. And it was only after, because Jared Taylor was also a Council of Conservative Citizen board member, it was only after Trent Lott and Bob Barr got into trouble for speaking at a Council of Conservative Citizens conference that C-SPAN started really pulling back on broadcasting a lot of those groups. They had not broadcast an American Renaissance conference since, I would say, maybe 98. And because in 2000, they didn't get a lot of press. They more or less were ostracized and avoided, so they was really struggling for press. They note that the only people that came in to cover their event in 2000 was a small news crew from a New Jersey television station. The funny thing about that, it was a public access station, and it was my program. He did not know that up until last year. When we let the cat out of the bag, we sat there. Now, give me an idea of how bad American Renaissance conferences can be. That's where I met David Duke. And I pretended I was the ride, and the crew that was entirely white were the ones that were going around videotaping and interviewing the white supremacists that were there. And I had to sit around in the hotel, hotel's lounge, and I got up to walk around, and David Duke and his entourage walked right past me. So you have that kind of you have that caliber of a crowd. And to and matter of fact, some of the videotape has not really of that the videotape interviews that we did were not put out all that frequently. We did post an interview that we had with Frank Borzilleri, who was at the time on the school board in Queens. And recently he had gotten fired from a Catholic school. He was going to be a Catholic school principal in the Bronx, where most of these students were black and Hispanic, and people cried foul. So we shot up the video that we had of the interview we conducted with him at American Renaissance 11 years ago. But that's, again, the kind of caliber of people that you see over at American Renaissance. But there was never really any opposition towards any of the conferences until maybe 2006, during the height of the anti-immigration campaigns with the Minuteman and all that. And they decided they was going to have their conference in Herndon, Virginia, where there was a lot of controversy surrounding a day labor camp there. So we figured they was trying to stir the pot. So we just started coming out more and more. In 2006, There were people that came out to protest in 2008. We came out to protest. In 2010, it, by the way, I should note, they had these things biannually. But in 2010, they held it on the same week as CPAC. So now everybody thought something was fishy. So we started making calls and started letting people know that this conference was happening and we need to be aware of what kind of people are going to be there. And once that started happening, the hotels started shutting their doors. And Jarrett Taylor, next thing you know, Jarrett Taylor had to put out a story saying that the conference was canceled this year because of threats that were made towards the hotels and such. None of the hotels have said anything of the sort. I can't find a police report where they had filed such a thing, but he went out there with it, and that's the story that he sticks to this day. In 2011, he tried to do a makeup, and he moved it to Charlotte, North Carolina. This time, the city started calling the hotels, and the hotels, after people called the city and let them know what was going on, remember, Charlotte is going to be where the Democratic National Convention is going to be. So when word came down that they was going to hold the conference at one of these hotels, the word got out. They said, look, we got to let folks know because you do not want to be the hotel that hosted this conference with the Democrats coming here. You might be the hotel that they avoid because of it.
And that's also, Charlotte's also known as being like a very big business center among the black community in the United States, like with a larger middle class than many other cities. So that's quite the incendiary choice of a city for the conference.
Yeah, and I think it's because one of the organizers, one of the people that was involved with American Renaissance has ties to Charlotte, and they were able to have events there in the past. David Duke has spoken there in the past. But I think it's just a matter of letting people know what was going on, and the rest was history. So this year, they used to be biannually, but now, if at first you don't succeed, try again. This year, he's holding it in somewhere along the outskirts of Nashville. We think we have an idea where it is, but we're not sure yet. But he said it was going to be at a government-owned facility because their logic is that the hotels are private institutions. They can kick you out if they do not want you there. But the government-owned facilities can't. But what they fail to realize is that they also can't keep anybody else out. So that they definitely keeping this a secret. But what he also did, what Mr. Taylor also did, was the conference is happening on March 16th through 18th. That's the date of the Left Forum up in Pace University in New York City. And I guess Taylor knows that some of us are going to be up there participating in that, so he figures we will be distracted, but there are people that are organizing against the American Renaissance Conference. What they will do is a question. I do not know. They might have the conference this year. They might not. It all depends on how involved people want to get in calling out this organization and this conference, because some of the worst people that you can think of are going to be in Nashville, Tennessee on March 16th through 18th. So I basically would just say also that there's a possibility that they are using a venue that has no idea what they're about and would have otherwise prevented this from happening. And I would just say to everyone that if you do have something during the dates of March 16th through 18th in the Nashville area that may possibly be something that you didn't expect it to be, try to be vigilant in finding out exactly the true nature of the event. And if it's something you don't want to be associated with, make every effort necessary to stifle it or close your doors to it. I mean, there are ways to go about it. But we'll see what happens on March 16th through 18th. We'll see what happens next month. And then we'll have another report on our website about it.
I think I remember from 2008, living on the West Coast, I think it was 2008, maybe 2007, there was supposed to be a Hammerskin conference in Portland, Oregon, and they couldn't find a venue and eventually were able to get themselves insinuated into a VFW hall, so Veterans of Foreign Wars, as a series of concerts and speaking events. And all it took in that instance was anti-racists going up and having a conversation with the people who are running the facility and saying, look, a lot of you fought during World War II or would have been fighting in World War II if you were old enough at the time, and here's who you're going to be allowing to use your facility. This is kind of an insult to your flag and to all the people who died fighting against Nazism abroad. And even if they were conservatives, that you know, struck a chord and was able to get the event canceled, and the Nazis didn't have enough time to actually schedule another place.
That's true. That's true. As a matter of fact, that's what we did in 2000. That rally that started us, so to speak. The organizers from the nationalist movement decided a couple of months later to hold an awards ceremony for those that participated in the rally, and they painted it as they called it a financial planning seminar and held it and tried to hold it at the VFW. But we got wind of it by this time when people started to do a full-fledged organization, and we got them kicked out of there. And how we got them kicked out of there was an interesting thing, because what happened was, again, the people there did not know what it was. They thought it was a financial planning seminar. Next thing you know, the day of the event, they saw an article in the Star Ledger, that's the newspaper up in New Jersey, that indicated that, yes, this is a white supremacist event. And when we got there, there was only a few of us, because they canceled the event. But the organizers didn't know they canceled the event. But when we got there, we saw the mayor of Manville, New Jersey, where this was going to be at, and some of the VFW administration there. And we talked to them, and we let them know what was going on, and we apologized. We also had to apologize also for, you know, we wanted to try to get some communication between all the groups involved so that whenever something like this comes across us, we have somebody to talk to, and we can let them know that these things are happening. And we were able to, like I said, like you just said, they were able to shut them down because, look, we cannot have people who want to promote our enemies, or people who have an ideology that we fought against, to come hold events at our venues and such. One of the most disturbing things that I think I've seen in the recent years was something called Patriot Action up in the Northeast, up in New Hampshire, where they held it at an American Legion Hall. They held a show and a conference at American Legion Hall. They're standing on a World War II era tank, Sieg Heiling. And that is a disturbing vision. That is a disturbing vision. And for any reason, if they are going to be that disrespectful, I have no problem in the world disrespecting them and disrespecting everything that they have going for them. So I try to make sure as much as possible that if there's any place that they're going to be, they're going to have their doors shut to, it's going to definitely be at these halls. It's going to be at the VFW's, the American Legion. Definitely make sure that you let them know that white supremacists use these halls to try to have events that are not exactly compatible with what it is those clubs are about. And I would just say, by the way, in regards to American Renaissance, they try to avoid those. They try to play the upper crust routine, so they try to do it in more aesthetically pleasing environments, like 4-star hotels or maybe even a catering hall if they can pull that off. So I would just say look for something that sounds like that in Nashville.
The term paleoconservative kind of reminds me of this trend in the anti-civilization world that is called national anarchism that's kind of come up over the last 10 years, I want to say. Can you talk a little bit about national anarchism?
National anarchism is an oxymoron, just like national socialism was, period, paragraph, the end. And the folks who are calling themselves national anarchists come out of that whole paleoconservative crowd. In fact, when the Charlotte, North Carolina conference was shut down, the Bay Area national anarchists were there, and they decided that they were going to hold a mini conference anyway. And they videotaped it and they put it up on YouTube and whatnot. So they were upset about the whole thing being shut down. Basically, again, sadly, it's the libertarians doing this. And it's something that the libertarians are going to have to come to terms with, because you can fight for freedom to a very bad and sick fault. And there are times when you're going to have to say fighting for freedom is one thing, but fighting for freedom at the expense of freedom is another. When you deal with this crowd, when you say that they have the right to have what kind of society that they want, you can't do that at your expense. It's kind of like defeating your purpose. And they have been soundly rejected by people who realize this. And the thing is, you have to be outside the libertarian circles to do it. And my question is, why? What is it that the libertarians are about that says that they have to threaten freedoms in order to preserve them? That is such a foolish notion. And they have to ask themselves why. And to that end, I would just say that it makes them just as dangerous as anybody who says they're not racist or says that they're not fascist, because they're still going, because they threaten you even more. They call you off. They think they're friends. They would look at you as a friend, yet they're stabbing you in the back with that nonsense. So when you hear the term national anarchist, I really don't take it seriously. You can't. It's like libertarian socialism or, you know, holy war. So, you know, that's the way I think of that term. I don't think it's anything new. I don't think it's anything different. I just think it's another case of people trying to be funny with the terms and just simply ignore it and look at it for what it is, fascism.
Well, just to say, libertarian socialism is a form of anarchism that tends towards socializing and communal ownership of wealth.
It depends on who you're dealing with. Though, see, this is one of the things that makes it a little dangerous, because way I first heard of libertarian socialism is from a guy named, and I don't, you know what, actually I'm not going to say his name because he's a glory hound and he lives for that attention and he's completely insane. But he went on to be a neo-Nazi. And that was one of the reasons why it was from him that I first heard the term. As a matter of fact, he had a website that called himself such. And I believe he was connected with the National Anarchist at one point. The reason why I keep on saying about libertarianism that it's unfortunate that they are associating themselves, they're defending that particular crowd, is that you have a lot of good people in it who know about doing things the right way. Unfortunately, they have to focus on the fact that some folks are using it the wrong way, and they have to basically, I don't know if the word should be streamlined or whatever, but I think there's something that says that there may be some kinks in the armor. There may be some holes in their theories, because you're allowing something that's going to undo everything that you say you're fighting for. If you read Mein Kampf, and I don't mean to, and this is not got, this is This is not hyperbole. I'm not going Godwin on anyone. But if you read Mein Kampf, you read Adolf Hitler pretty much talks like this. I mean, the only thing, I mean, if he attacks the Jews on a regular, of course, obviously in the book. But if you look at it, he talks about being socialist and all that. It's almost as if I'm reading something that a libertarian would put out. And that's something to bear in mind. And I would simply say for anybody who just lost their mind from me saying that, read it. Read the book and see what kind of parallels that you can put. Because I can do it all day long.
Yeah, I think definitely it would behoove everyone, especially libertarians, if they could root out some of the racist or any of the racist elements that are in their movement, because it really does do a disservice to whatever their philosophy can bring. I'm not a libertarian myself. I'm an anarchist, but like my.
And so am I.
Yeah.
Here's a curious thing, though. It is a really curious thing. Are you familiar with an old documentary from back in the 80s called Anarchism in America?
Yeah, I saw that.
Okay, I swear by this thing. Because it gave me an idea, because I saw it for the first time in 96. And at that time, I was trying to get a grasp as to what libertarianism was all about. I was still trying to figure it out. I couldn't put my finger on it. And then I watched this thing, and I was like, there it goes. Libertarians are more or less, I don't know, I would say more social order-driven anarchists that are more driven towards the social order and stuff. I mean, I guess that's the best way to put it, but it gives an idea of how things have not broken down, but what kind of facets anarchism has. And if anybody gets a chance to see it, because I know AK Press puts out the DVD, it's definitely a worthwhile discussion piece if you ever get a chance to look at it. But it does show you, and it didn't paint the libertarians in a bad light at all. And it shouldn't, nor should it. I think that there's a lot of lessons that libertarians and anarchists can take from it that will pretty much keep the kind of people that we're concerned about at bay. It's just a matter of, I guess the word is suspending or conceding some things that right about now we're not too ready to, we're not prepared to do that, but either it's going to happen, or and this is what I think will happen. We're going to see a different restructuring of this society to the point that the United States, I don't think, will exist in about 50 or 60 years.
I think for either of those visions, either libertarianism or for anarchism, that would have to happen. So that's looks like the future's bright for us.
Mm-hmm. I think so. I think what I see in this day and age is a lot of times I look at folks in the political scene, and I don't care if they're hardcore mainstream or just far on the right or far on the left. I think we're at the point where we're not too sure of the future of the United States, or if we want the United States to have a future. And I'm not even talking about anyone that they consider to be on the fringe. I'm talking about those mainstream folks. And because it seems like they're just phoning it in whenever they fly their patriotism in our faces and all. It just seems like they say it just to be cute, but then again they turn around and say states' rights this, states' rights that. And you can't have the 10th Amendment because the 14th Amendment made the United States an actual country. Before then, you can have the 10th Amendment because the states were separate nations. And that's basically where Ron Paul comes in again, where he says he wants the power to go back to the states. He wants to end the Fed. He means end the Fed. He does not want the federal government to have any power whatsoever. He wants the states to have all the power, which means we don't exist as a country anymore. And this is popular to a lot of folks. So what's going on? And before the wrong people get a hold of wrong people, take control of this narrative and take control of the direction of that. The right people need to. And that's one of the reasons why I have to stress upon libertarians to think about what you're doing. Just because you want to advance the freedom of everyone in society doesn't mean you advance the freedoms of those who want to destroy yours. And that's a very important thing.
It seems like over the last few years, there's been more discussion or a shift in discussion from, at least among radical anti-racist folks, from using the phrases of like ARA or anti-racist action more towards Antifa, anti-fascist action, more in the European style. Can you talk about that shift?
I haven't really thought about that until you just mentioned it. Because I didn't think of it like that. But then again, I can understand why. There's no reflection on ARA, I don't think. I mean, a lot of those folks who are Antifa still respect ARA. But I think what it is that they rather not be under the auspices of a particular group. And because, you know, a lot of these... a lot of the folks that were Antifa in the country have their own groups, have their own local organizations, or they're just that one person. And they'll still work with ARA. They still have a good rapport, good relationship with such a group. But ultimately, they all want to be their own people, and that's fine. That is totally fine. I think it probably even is a good thing, so people can feel that they are part of something a little bit more intimate whenever they get involved with such a group, as opposed to something that's spread out all over the country. By the same token, I wouldn't say sleep on ARA. I think ARA is a good organization. I think I would like to see them grow more. I would like to see them go back to what they were doing in 95, where they were holding more public events and all. But they're still a good group, and I think that people don't sleep on them. They know what they're doing. I mean, I started a chapter briefly in Cleveland, Ohio, back in the 90s, so I definitely have love for them.
Will One People's Project be counter-demonstrating at the American Renaissance conference that's slated from March 16th to 18th outside of Nashville?
I don't think I'll be going to Nashville because I think it's important. I've been dealing with American Renaissance for a while now, and basically we chased them out of D.C., and that's what I was looking to do. They always hold white supremacist events down south. It's nothing new. But I just like to keep them away from all the politicians. I mean, even at the very least on general principle terms, if anything. So my next move is to just try to get people who are on our side, more or less, to get involved, because a lot of people don't know One People's Project. A lot of people have not been familiar with us, except for the folks in Philly after Occupy Philly started blowing up. The organization is known more on the right than it is on the left, and I want to change that. So I'll probably be at the left forum next month. So hope to see everyone there.
Well, thanks so much. I really, it's been a good time.
We've been speaking with blogger, activist, and anti-fascist Daryl Lamont Jenkins of One People's Project. Check out the website at www.onepeoplesproject.com. And you've been listening to The Final Straw on Asheville Free Media, ashevillefm.org. I'm your host, Bursa Goodness. The Final Straw can also be heard on KXCF 91.5 FM in Marshall, California, and KWTF in Sonoma County, California. This show is brought to you with the support of the worker owners at Firestorm Books and Cafe at 48 Commerce Street here in Asheville, North Carolina. Firestorm features organic coffee and milks, house-made baked treats, vegan sandwiches, radical literature, and a community calendar that can be found at www.firestormcafe.com. Have a great week. Homophobes.
Aryan nations and hammer skins. You can wear my nuts on your Nazi chins. I love a man in uniform. And just what exactly are the great historical accomplishments of your race that make you proud to be white? Capitalism, slavery, genocide, sitcoms. This is your fucking white history, my friend. So why don't we start making history worth being proud of and start fighting the real fucking enemy? Swastikas and Klan robes. Sexist, racist, homophobes. This one's for the master race. My brown power is in your white power face.